wasn't worth going over.
Good afternoon. Bringing the State Affairs Committee to order at 3:05 p.m. in the Max Greenberg room in the Alaska Capitol. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Birch.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Cuff.
Here.
Representative Knopf.
Here.
Representative Wool.
Here.
Representative Ledoux.
Here.
Chair Clayce Thompson.
Here. With seven members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. Reminder to please silence your cell phones, and thank you, Kelsey and Heather and Calvin, for helping the committee run today. We have two items on today's agenda, bringing back House Bill 173 from Representative Josephson for quick action, which was truncated last week because of a bill hearing I had to run to up on the fifth floor. And then the second item on today's agenda is the first hearing, we being the second committee referral for House Bill 152 from Representative Tuck relating to organized militia and the Alaska State Defense Force. We will start with House Bill 173. This is the third hearing. Representative Josephson, if you'd like to make brief comments, please do so, and we can move to committee discussion and entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Andy Josephson, House District 17. This is a bill that would recreate a climate change commission. We had such a thing created a couple of administrations ago, I think by executive order. The principal change that I spoke to last week was the removal of its rather robust funding source. And I'll take any questions if there are any.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All curiosity.
Well, I just had a question. Representative Josephson, I'm just wondering how you feel about the fact that there's no funding right out of the gate, that this commission will be effective, or are you concerned that without the per-barrel fee, that, in other words, without funding, are you concerned it's just going to be a sort of a I don't know what the right word is, but that will have this enough weight behind it.
Through the chair, Representative Wall, I am concerned about that. This is what was politically possible, and I do think that the appointees will be men and women that care about this topic and have a sort of zeal and are interested in serving the state on this important issue, even without the use of those sort of resources. And then I'm hopeful that there are grants that can be obtained that can be utilized to get back to the more important mitigation efforts that will cost the state more money, and so that there's a pathway to make a real difference through this commission.
Thank you. I guess it's just a statement. I happen to one of the testifiers, I think, on our first committee meeting was a scientist, a CI scientist from Fairbanks, who I happen to run into, who's asking about the status of this bill, but seemed also concerned that without the funding, he was worried it might just be a not as effective as he would like.
Other committee comments? Madam Vice Chair, a motion?
Yes, I move committee substitute for HB 173 version 30-LSO163/R out of committee with individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal notes.
There is an objection. Representative Johnson, would you like to speak to your objection before we take a roll call?
Well, I guess my biggest thing is the fact that the municipality, if we have a nine-member commission, the municipality of Anchorage and Matsu Borough is just, for the number of people are there, are not, there's only one person representing all of that area. And so I just don't feel like that the Matsu Borough is represented well on this commission.
Noted. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll?
Representative Ledoux.
Yay.
Representative Birch.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Tuck.
Yes.
Representative Knopp.
No.
Representative Wohl.
Yes.
Chair Christ-Hopkins.
Yes.
Four yays, three nays.
And with four yays and three nays, the motion to move committee substitute for House Bill 173 moves from committee with attached recommendations and zero fiscal note, and we can circulate the paperwork. So you proceed. Thank you, Representative Josephson and Ms. Holland, for presenting the bill. Which takes us to the next bill on today's agenda, House Bill 152 from Representative Tuck. And Representative Tuck and Ms. Kloster, please put yourselves on the record and present the bill. And I should note, for context, we have Deputy Commissioner Dole with the MVA online, as well as Administrative Services Division Director Brian Duffy, also of DMVA online, which I don't see Brian yet, but he may be forthcoming, as well as Alaska State Defense Force Commander Colonel John James.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chris Tuck from District 23, South Central Anchorage. Thank you for hearing House Bill 152 today, and thank you, committee members, for allowing us to present our bill. And with me, I have staff Kendra Kloster to my office. House Bill 152 is another step in changing Title 26, the organized militia. We had a very important bill that went over the last 2 years on restructuring our military code of justice, and as we went through that, we realized that some other improvements that need to happen. So this is one of those improvements. And so we're trying to modernize Alaska's organized militia. Basically, there's four components that we have there: the Alaska Army National Guard, Alaska Air National Guard, Alaska State Defense Force, and the Alaska Naval Militia. And they all constitute an efficient military force able to respond quickly to the needs of Alaskans. So there are several key components to House Bill 152, including clarifying that the Adjutant General has command and control of the organized militia under the direction of the Governor as Commander-in-Chief. The TAG already possesses statutory control of the organized militia, but will clarify command as well. Command and control are important functions in any military organization. Commanders set and are responsible for the organization's priorities, goals, and missions, while people in control have authority to direct people to accomplish those missions. It is logical, but not explicitly set in statute, that the TAG should have control and command of the organized militia, so House Bill 152 will help correct that. So this also enhances the organized militia emergency response capability. Existing law authorizes only the governor to order the organized militia into active state service, except the governor may delegate to the Adjutant General the authority to call out the organized militia in case of a wildland fire. House Bill 152 would expand the ability for the TAG to order the organized militia into active state service for other circumstances, including earthquakes, flooding, or any other emergency situation to save lives, prevent human suffering, or mitigate great property damage in the state. The circumstance would also only be used if the governor is unreachable and time is of the essence to save Alaska lives. For example, should we experience a similar Good Friday earthquake and the governor is either not in communication range or communication could have been knocked out due to the earthquake to activate the guard, or hopefully never happens, the governor is seriously injured or killed. So underneath those circumstances, if the governor is some way not available, this will allow the TAG to take command, take control. Currently, our statute does not allow anyone other than the governor to call the organized militia to duty. If this example did not happen, we would first need to swear in a new governor, losing precious time that our National Guard could be saving Alaskan lives. And then it also ensures the Adjutant General has the ability to adopt regulations as needed. This update would help address regulatory deficiencies, correct outdated policies, and implement with the approval of the governor. And then expansion of tuition assistance programs for all four components of the organized militia. The Alaska State Defense Force and Alaska Naval Militia is added to the authorization for payment of tuition and fees. Currently, the Adjutant General may authorize payment for the Alaska National Guard. As the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs works to ensure a strong state Alaska State Defense Force. This is just another tool that we can provide to assist those who volunteer to protect Alaskans. I also want to note that this does not require a fiscal note, as this is only available when funds are appropriated for the use of tuition assistance from the federal government. And the program has not been funded for the last couple of years. And that's pretty much the elements of House Bill 152.
Looks like a question from Representative Johnson.
Thank you.
And just a note, Representative Johnson, to perhaps move the microphone, orient it in your direction so we can
certainly get a thank you very
question
much.
On the record.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess just out of curiosity, mostly, what's driving this bill? I mean, is it something? I mean, I guess I have a number of people that are probably active in, you know, the State Defense Force and so on, and I had not necessarily had them call this to my attention entirely. So I was just wondering what made you put this together.
Sure, and through the chair, Representative Chris Tuck. It was coming from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and it was to ensure that basically we're modernizing all the Title 26. Okay. So we're looking at circumstances that will, in looking at the future, on how we can handle situations better. It's a way to make improvements and to clarify authority and command for the Adjutant General. And under what conditions and what limitations?
Follow up.
And this is just kind of I'm just wondering as if you know, the adjutant, if this passes, then the adjutant general's duties would be updated to reflect that he would be the first person to call if the governor's out, not available. I mean, right now I'm trying to think, what does the adjutant what do they have in their duty list exactly? I'm not entirely sure. So,
yeah, and if I may, Mr. Chair, we have, it's a chain of command. And just like if you're out on the battlefield and the captain goes down, the next person takes charge until that captain's able to return. And so this is just that same type of element. If for whatever reason, the governor cannot be reached, the governor is not available, or the governor in some way has been harmed or not able to perform, then the next person in chain of command is able to take over. And this clarifies that.
Follow-up?
Until the governor is able to come back to command. And then at that time, the governor still has full authority on what actions have taken and actions that will be taken.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you. So it wouldn't have been, and if this wasn't here, that it would go to the lieutenant governor, or, I mean, I guess I'm trying to figure out how this really changed. Does it change something, or does it clarify, just clarifying something, or is there any real change specifically? I mean, so therefore the adjutant general could say this only in regard to militia, not calling out the National Guard or anything like that. So
yes, and then we also have I think Bertie Bowen's with us. I don't know who's all with us. And Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole's with us.
Yeah.
So he can answer those questions if you like.
I mean, maybe this time we can transition to invited testimony too, to sort of get the full expose on the legislation, and then sort of committee questions can be directed to sponsor or the agency. Deputy Commissioner Dole, I have you down for invited testimony, and if that is so, would you please put yourself on the record, state your affiliation, and share comments on House Bill 152?
Good afternoon. This is Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole of the State of Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And besides the other folks you identified with me earlier, I also have Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver, the Staff Judge Advocate for the Alaska National Guard. The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs supports this bill as providing a updated, relevant, and viable legal nexus for the Adjutant General to carry out her existing duties as they exist today. It does not grow those duties, but rather allows her and the Governor of Alaska to do their duties more effectively. And there's several areas it does that in, if we kind of look at the bill going through it. First, it establishes, as the Adjutant General has control over the Alaska Organized Militia, she also has command. And it's vital that she have both the responsibility and the authority to carry out the duties that are envisioned in Title 26 and going forward in doing things. In doing that also, one of the areas I, Representative Johnson asked about what is driving this bill, in terms of the limited authority for the Adjutant General to place members of the organized militia into state active duty, that was highlighted by a request for forces for a search and rescue where there was a delay in being able to reach the governor. The delay was not material in this case, but when minutes matter, you need to be able to quickly and efficiently allow the militia to go forth what they volunteered to do when they volunteered to do it. To wait for a succession of command for the lieutenant governor to be sworn in after a mass disaster could result in unnecessary pain, suffering, and loss of lives of Alaskans. So that was kind of one of those wake-up calls for us. Well, we need the militia immediately, and we can't and we're not guaranteed we can reach the governor immediately. We need to make sure we're able to, we have a mechanism to address that until we can reestablish communications. Another part, in looking at the Title 26 as it existed, there were areas that resulted in excessive administrative burden on the governor and on the Adjutant General's office in sending information to the governor. For instance, a retirement application. As Title 26 is written right now, the Adjutant General cannot approve that request for retirement. Rather, it needs to go to the governor's office for the governor's approval to retire. By comparison, on the federal side, the service level secretary's office can approve a retirement. Every retirement on the federal side does not go up to the President of the United States to approve, as this bill would be written doing going here. The additional provisions of the bill going forth clarify the regulation authority for internal matters within the Alaska Organized Militia, the Adjutant General, to again make sure the force is effective and relevant and capable of doing what it needs to do. Better clarifies the role of the Alaska State Defense Force and the Assistant Adjutant Generals in going forth and doing things. In short, it basically brings the Title 26 half a century forward. I'm ready for any questions of the committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Dole. Maybe before we dive into questions, is there anyone else there with you on the line who would like to offer testimony, including the names you mentioned at the beginning of your testimony?
Sure, sir. This is, for the record, I'm Colonel Alaska John C. James. I'm the commander of the Alaska State Defense Force and very much appreciate this opportunity to provide testimony regarding House Bill 152. The Alaska State Defense Force is extremely supportive of House Bill 152. This proposal would reduce response times during times of emergencies while not negating the reporting responsibility from the Adjutant General to the Governor. The bill clarifies the Adjutant General's responsibilities regarding regulations as to commission, enlistment, administration, equipment and maintenance, discipline, and training for the Alaska Organized Militia, which includes the Alaska State Defense Force. The Alaska State Defense Force Commander-in-Chief is the Governor of Alaska. It serves when called to active state services. The service are paid for by the state. We are trained and equipped by the state. House Bill 152 would increase the professionalism and strengths of the Alaska State Defense Force by regulating it in a far superior and doctrinally correct military manner. It strengthens the entire Alaska Organized Militia by doing so and increases the security of the state of Alaska. And I greatly appreciate this opportunity to have provided you with this today.
Thank you very much for your invited testimony. And anyone else there, I'm guessing on base, who has comments that would be important for the committee to consider on House Bill 152?
Mr. Chair, this is Deputy Commissioner Dole again. Neither Colonel Weaver nor Director Duffy have comments at this point. They stand by for your questions.
Thank you very much, Deputy Commissioner Dole. At this time, committee questions. Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did receive a letter from a Mr. Wood regarding some concerns with this. One of the things that struck me is many of us in the room may remember when Ronald Reagan was shot in 1981, early 80s. As I recall, it was Alexander Haig, the Secretary of State, who jumped in and said, "Well, I'm in charge." And As anybody with a rudimentary understanding of the Constitution understands, the he was not in charge. When the president's incapacitated, it actually goes to the vice president. And I think one of the things that I that it kind of resonated with me was the adjutant general basically empowered to kind of strike out independently if the civilian authority was not available. I guess I'm troubled with that, and I struggle with what's so urgent that we can't get a call from our civilian authority to have that authorization received. There's a number of other things that I'm concerned that this may erode, and I understand the intent and objective is to streamline the delivery of services and so forth. But at the same time, I'd appreciate some sort of response on what's wrong with. I mean, the governor's in charge, and why would we want to circumvent that?
And I'm not sure. Deputy Commissioner Dole or Representative Tuck?
Well, I'll take both of you, perhaps. Let him clarify after me. But as Representative Chris Tuck, I think the main thing is that from the Adjutant General down, there is a direct link to who's next in charge. Not to say that that we know that if it wasn't the governor, it's the lieutenant governor, but for quick responses, quick reaction. We know when a soldier's down or the ranking officer's down, we know the next person's grabbing up the rifle and heading in. And so this kind of just makes it a direct link right to the adjutant general all the way down to the chain of command. So it's not so questionable when you need quick responses. But I'll let Deputy Commissioner Dole respond.
And Deputy Commissioner, or really anyone there on base or with DMV, please chime in with any comments.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, I think in looking at Mr. Wood's interpretation of the section, it is inconsistent with the language in the proposed bill itself. There is no blanket granting of authority to the Adjutant General in such circumstances. Rather, the Adjutant General is required to continue to act within the intent expressed of the governor previous to a disruptive event. What this allows, and also it is not a blanket to say I am in charge and impose martial law. The language specifically exempts the National Guard or the Alaska State Defense Force being used in security or law enforcement ways. Rather, what this does allow is where minutes do matter, such as if the Good Friday earthquake occurs in January instead of June next time, it allows us to immediately deploy militia members to start assisting with extraction from those debris piles. Minutes matter in a mass of earthquake or another mass disaster, and this allows us to immediately provide first aid services and other first responder services. It is not a blanket waiver for all sorts of National Guard or Alaska State Defense Force actions. And specifically, it is only effective until the Adjutant General reestablishes communications with the governor or his successor to confirm ongoing intent. But where minutes matter, this allows us to save lives.
And if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
I just want to point to page 3, section 3 of the bill, and it's really limited duties, and it's in the cases of wildland fire, earthquake, flooding, or other natural catastrophes. So it's not really to be, bringing in the organized militia into anything other than these type of natural catastrophes or emergencies. And it's really to save lives, to prevent human suffering, or to mitigate great property damage there in B of that section. So it is limited, and it's for those purposes only. And then C, the Adjutant General may not order any part of the organized militia into active state service for actions that would subject civilians to the use of military power. And that is regulatory, prescriptive, proscriptive, or compulsory, unless approved by the governor before giving the order. So it's limited.
follow-up, Representative Birch?
Yeah, you know, thanks, Mr. Chair. You know, the devil's in the details. And, you know, when you come up with something that's a well-intended and well-meaning, opening that basically says, yeah, we can do this response without some sort of authorization, contact, or communication from the governor, who is ultimately responsible, I guess the concern I have is, you know, it's as well-intended as we sit around the room here, but, some years hence, somebody looks at that and says, well, hey, this is how much latitude we have. So I don't know. I think we just need to understand, what's being permitted here. I think if we've got if we do have a guard that's under the direction of the governor, I think the governor is actually the one that has to ultimately be accountable for that. And that's my concern. I don't dispute any of the good intentions and the objectives here of the proposal. I'm worried about what might happen depending on how it's interpreted. Thank you, sir.
And if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And right now, currently, the Adjutant General does have that authority for wildland fires. This expands it to earthquakes, flooding, and other natural catastrophes. So you don't want to name out all the natural catastrophes, but if it's okay for them to do it, and for the Adjutant General to be able to act on wildfires, we believe that it's okay for them to do it for earthquakes and everything else also. So this is just expanding. And really what we're trying to do is just clarify some old archaic language that we have in Title 26 and just bring it up to modern day situations.
Representative Johnson.
Now, I'm not as concerned about the when he can call and to call them up, but as much as the Section 1, where it basically says that the governor's command is exercised through the Adjutant General. And it says, but the one part that just really jumps out at me, where it says the Adjutant General shall adopt regulations that provide for the organization, administration, and equipment of the organized militia that are not contrary to federal law or regulations. I mean, to me, that's just such a direct piece that belongs to the governor and the executive office, that we delegate that by statute. I'm really not comfortable with that at all. I'm sorry, if I can just continue on. I mean, I'm not entirely, I mean, there's been a lot happening, as a lot has happened within the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and with the Adjutant General in the past. And right now, I guess I'm just really not comfortable with making it less transparent. I think there's still some issues there that need to be addressed. So,
if I may, Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair, I appreciate your concerns, and I really get the comments that you're making, because that's some of the same concerns that we had over the last 2 years in coming up with the Military Code of Justice. We were also concerned about allowing the Adjutant General and their authority to be able to adopt their own regs. We also were concerned about them being able to get out of underneath the regular administrative reg review. But we have all of our departments are able to adopt regulations currently, and this just kind of clarifies things a little bit just for them to be able to come up with their emergency measures, come up with protocols and everything else that they know best what to do. But as far as giving too much control or misusing their authority, I don't think this is going to be affected in that way, unlike the Military Code of Justice was. Yeah, thank you.
If I may, this is Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver, the judge advocate for the Adjutant General. Just to be clear, the provision regarding the Adjutant General exercising the authority of the governor, that's actually in current law right now. It's in point 170, that's 26.0510. It was just moved up there. My reading of this bill, it looks like it was moved up there for clarification, for order, for putting the authorities in one place as opposed to multiple places throughout the code. Again, cleaning up the code, 26.05, and updating it. As far as the regulations go, if I could just clarify that a little bit, typically Army regulations or military regulations aren't regulations that are that affect the public, and these regulations definitely don't win it, or at least as they're envisioned. They affect the actual soldiers, and so to kind of piggyback on what Representative Tuck had said, they're internal procedures, but in the military we call them regulations. They're military procedures on how to govern internally the Alaska Organized Militia.
Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Weaver. Question from Representative Knopp.
For Representative Tuck, through the chair. How large of an organization currently comprises the State Defense Force? Do we know how many members?
And if you don't mind, I'll allow the Deputy Commissioner to answer that question.
Deputy Commissioner Dole?
Through the chair, this is Deputy Commissioner Dole, and because they're on a growth spurt, I'm going to turn to, I'm going to lateral that again to Colonel Alaska John James, who will give you the latest number.
For the record, I'm Colonel Alaska John James, Commander of the Alaska Defense Force. That number currently is 80 as of last row, 80. Thank you.
80. And for follow-up, this is for the representative, the sponsor. So just a while back, we did something that put militia members under the Workman's Comp Act during training exercises, and I see this bill does the same thing. Is this a different group of people, or did we not already address that in the last bill? Or I'm trying to jog my memory, please.
If you don't mind, can you let me know what section you're looking at?
I'm looking at page 4, line 16, under section 5 there.
Okay, and... And this is, if you don't mind, we broke this up into about four different bills, I'm sorry, three different bills. What was going to be one huge big statute change, we decided to try to break that up by categories a little bit to make it easier to comprehend each element to see how it all fits together. And if you don't mind, I'm going to allow my staff, Kendra, to mention this section.
I don't mind.
Ms. Kloster, please go ahead.
Kendra Kloster, staff to Representative Chris Tuck. And so, as the representative mentioned, this is one of three bills. So this is conforming language, which does take into account the bills that we have considered before, where you saw the workers' comp. So that's just also keeping this in line. So when we were drafting these bills and putting them together, trying to make sure that we were putting all the different components in as these three work together. So it's conforming language.
Representative Knopp.
So I was trying to recall, but it was militia members in the last bill, and I thought there was only a number of 40 at that time, if memory serves me. So are we talking different memberships here, or help me out just a little bit there, please.
Representative Knopp, through the chair. This is the same group of individuals. I believe at that time there was about 76 members, and now it has moved up to 80. But this is the same group, the Alaska State Defense Force, that we have addressed in this section that we are looking at, and also in the last bill where we added them to the workers' compensation.
So, so then this language isn't absolutely necessary in this bill because they are in fact covered under prior bills. I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I'm just wanting to make sure that it is somewhat irrelevant because we approved that at the last bill or two that we addressed. Is that fair to say?
Representative Knopf, through the chair, I would say this is some cleanup language that kind of carries over from that other bill because we have some other parts in that section that are also being cleaned up. In this bill, we're seeing a lot of different things move around. As you'll see sections, some are deleted and moved to other areas because we're trying to streamline where these statutes are and clean it up. So that's some other parts of this bill. And so I think that's
it. And if I may, Mr. Chair, just from just part of that cleanup and going over to Representative Johnson, his Section 6 was moved to Section 1. So that's just another example. There's nothing that's getting changed in that as far as duties, but just clean. So everything reads nice once you get done with Title 26. Everything is clean as you go through it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ledoux.
So I'm a little bit confused here. So if the other bill passes, would the language in this bill about the workers' compensation be necessary?
I'll have to make sure on that previous bill that then through the chair that that this section is included in that. I'm not sure that this section was included in this because this has to do with it may. I have to check and see if they overlap each other or if they're because when we broke them apart, it was hard to break everything so clean. So we had to choose which went with this bill and which went with this the other bill, in trying to get concepts categorized.
Thank you.
What is the status of the bill that relates to workers' comp and militia? Where in the legislative process is that legislation right now?
Representative Christ Tompkins through the chair. So the three different bills that we have that are going through on the Title 26 reform, House Bill 150, which is one of those, has just heard and moved out of House Finance Committee. The other one was passed from the House and is now over in the Senate. So they're moving somewhat simultaneously. And we also have Lieutenant Colonel Weaver on the phone that I can also talk to as we work through this process of breaking these bills up, and he's helped us with part of the drafting process as he was also involved in just being our support as we do this. He's the JAG attorney over at On Base, and so he's worked with us pretty extensively on this, so he can also help answer some of these questions. But I do think that this language probably still needs to remain in the bill, as there are other parts in this language that are cleaning up and being moved in that section.
Okay. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I got a few questions, but for one, was mentioned earlier, I think by Mr. Dole, was about search and rescue. Like if there was needed, the adjutant general could call upon that in more quickly if the governor's unreachable. And I wasn't aware that search and rescue was something that needed a direct order from the governor. I mean, if someone, you know, you hear about search and rescues on mountains or avalanches all the time. I didn't know the governor had to call that directly in. So that's, I guess, my first question. Is that a direct governor order, or is that something National Guard can do on their own?
This is Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver through the chair. This is called immediate response authority, which you're seeing in Section 2 there. Section 3, sorry. It's immediate response authority, and under Title 32, which we also operate, the National Guard operates under Title 32 of the United States Code, we have that immediate response authority, and we can launch at the request of civil authority to go rescue anybody, whenever it's to save lives, prevent human suffering, or mitigate great property. This bill codifies that from a state active duty perspective. So to answer your question, the governor does not need to or should not need to, again, because time is of the essence. If somebody needs a Humvee and the National Guard has a Humvee and civil authority asks us to, whoever's doing the search and rescue, Alaska State Troopers, whoever, asks us to respond, this bill will give us the authority to respond without having to call the governor first. But as you see in the bill, it also requires us to seek approval from the governor if time allows, and to continue to seek approval as necessary.
Follow up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Another, I think the testifier from Alaska State Defense Force mentioned that reduced reporting time from the adjutant general to the governor. Unless the governor's like seriously disabled, you'd think reporting time, I would imagine the governor is probably pretty available most of the time. I mean, he's at the end of a phone line. Someone can find the governor if they need to, I would think. So I don't know why something would have to happen more quickly than you could call the governor. I mean, unless he was, you know, in a earthquake or, you know, seriously injured. I would think that to reduce reporting time, I mean, I would think the governor would be able to be reached, right? I mean, on a sort of day-to-day standard operating. I guess when he said, decrease reporting time, I guess is that an issue? Is that where you can't reach the governor and you want to do something, and then you do it, and then you'd call him later and tell him what you did? Does that happen? Anybody?
Representative Tuck?
I was going to let the Deputy Commissioner answer that one. But the full authority does come from the governor ultimately. And so I think somewhere in here, I'm looking for right now, I think it's 72 hours that they have sorry. So to reach out to the governor, so this is Section 3, Subsection D, the Adjutant General shall make reasonable and continuous efforts to contact the governor for approval of any orders issued, and then E, following that, if the Adjutant General exercises the authority under B of this section but does not receive the governor's approval under D of this section, the Adjutant General shall reassess whether there remains a continued need for an organized militia response as soon as practical, but not later than 72 hours after the order under B of this section was given. So it is another checks and balances in there just to make sure that they're going the right path, and also making sure that the governor didn't all of a sudden take command again.
Any further comment from the DMVA contingent in Anchorage?
Through the chair, this is Deputy Commissioner Dole. I would just observe in Alaska that individuals are not always a phone call away. We have flights in parts of the state where it can be, there are dead zones you may be flying, and that there will be a delay. And certainly in certain villages, it can be a challenge to actually find and connect someone. And our governor is expected to travel statewide, and we do have those lapses in times, and when minutes count, we would like the authority to not delay what needs to be done because of it.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's see. So, I mean, I guess what you're saying, this is natural disaster, fires, earthquake, floods. This isn't like a weird plane flying in and crashing, and we don't know the origin of that plane or something like that. This is not really a military thing. This is more of a natural disaster, if I'm understanding that correctly. And again, one of the earlier testifiers mentioned it would increase the security, but that, to me, speaks more to not really a natural disaster, but security, which is more like a threat. So I guess I have some of the concerns that, you know, the governor's unavailable and, you know, some adjutant general calls in a major military offensive or, you know, some, I'm exaggerating, of course, but again, it's sort of the command and control structure that you'd want to make sure is intact. Is there any constitutional issues that, you know, the governor's commander-in-chief, that's in the Constitution, is there anything that would be a problem with that?
Not from Ledge Legal.
Okay.
Yeah, and if I may, Mr. Chair, on the comment on protecting, would you say security, sense of security, there is, like with wildfires, for example, there is a need to secure people, get them evacuated, get them into shelters. So there is that sense of security that I think that the bill is referring to mostly.
Last question.
Follow-up.
When was there a time where, say, the Alaska State Defense Force was called in on sort of an emergency basis that was when was the last time they were called in on either by the governor or otherwise? I'm just curious what kind of situation it would be.
Sure, and I'll let
Colonel James.
The commissioner, or
yeah.
Colonel James.
Through the chair, yes, it's Colonel James, Alaska State Defense Force. Sure, we've been called forward during the Card Street Fire, the Sockeye Fire, Miller's Reach Fire, several times through the last decade. The Alaska State Defense Force has answered the call. Thanks.
Thanks.
Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does the Defense Force have an exposure or experience with satellite phones? I've understood that those are relatively useful for remote and immediate communication at any time.
Through the chair, this is Colonel James again. Yes, we have several satellite-based systems. We have satellite phones. We have Iridium GOES, BGANs. We have about five different technologies, WildBlue, HughesNet, that access satellites and provide communications for the Defense Force back to the Joint Operations Center. Yes.
Can you share one of those with the governor's office?
I'd be happy to. Absolutely, yes.
Okay. It sounds like there's no good excuse for not being able to be in close communication almost at any time. But just as an observation, until the linemen are lined up to come in and save the day. So,
if I may, this is Colonel James again. There are dead spots throughout the state. We have to do testing, but And there have been periods of time, although extremely rare, where that communication was difficult. So I think we've made great strides. But at the same time, what we're trying to do is to mitigate risk both to Alaskans and the state.
Okay. Thank you, sir. That's helpful. I'm not that familiar. I've never used one. I've known people that have used them when they're hunting and traveling remotely. So appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
I can say I've been using sat phones a few times. They're great, but they aren't, at least in the mountainous area in the southeast, always 100% reliable. But Representative Ledoux.
Does the governor's office, perhaps through his security detail, have a sat phone when he goes, you know, flying or something like that?
Deputy Commissioner, maybe a question for you.
The Chair, this is Deputy Commissioner Dole. Yes is the short answer. However, given the terrain, they may not always work immediately.
Thank you.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to get off topic just a little bit, but it's not really directly related to this particular bill. But I was reading Section 2, and it talks about when organized militia is called into active state service. Then it talks about the things that you're able to call them into service for, and that being the event of war, disasters, insurrections, rebellions, catastrophes, and on and on. So my question really is, so when the volunteers, the militia, decide to join, I would imagine when they're called into state service, they are probably subject to the same disciplinary actions as enlisted men at that point. Would that be fair to say? And two, are they fully aware of that when they are on active duty, when they sign up, I guess?
So this is Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver, Judge Advocate for the Adjutant General, through the chair. So the ACMJ that was passed last year, the HB 126, applies to all members of the organized militia. That includes the Alaska National Guard, the Alaska State Defense Force, and the Alaska Naval Militia, whether they're Title 32 under Title 32 United States Code or state active duty under Chapter 26.05.
Any further questions from the committee? HB 152, Representative Johnson.
I just want to express some concerns. I just have some concerns with having going, if we, oh, we can't find the governor, and going immediately to some military-type control. And, I mean, I have a real struggle with that. I have a real problem with that. I think it belongs in the governor's office. It belongs in the vice or lieutenant governor, and to delegate that immediately to the adjutant general. I just have some real concerns with it, and I feel that that's how what we're looking at doing here, more than just with wildfires and so on. So I just want to express my real concerns with this bill.
So if I may, this is Lieutenant Colonel Chris Weaver, Judge Advocate for the Adjutant General, through the chair. So this is what's called immediate response authority. National Guards throughout the 54 National Guards, that's 50 states, 4 territories, have some form of immediate response authority, usually through Department of Defense directive for Title 32 purposes or some other way through state law as well. So what this is it's for a quick response to any kind of emergency, to when civilian authorities, so if Alaska State Troopers, Alaska Anchorage Police Department, or somebody else asks for our assistance, we're able to respond and at the same time inform the governor of what's going on, because the governor is ultimately responsible. It's similar to, you know, this has been done many times, it's similar to saying, you know, a police officer is not going to call the police chief and ask for authority. He's going to respond to that emergency, that request for assistance, to save lives, to prevent human suffering, and to mitigate great property damage. Or an EMT is not going to call the boss before he rolls. He's going to get the call, similar to what we would get from, the say, Alaska State Troopers, and then we'd roll with the military capabilities that we have. Not necessarily like a military mission, but because we have certain things like helicopters and Humvees and fire suppressant fire trucks, specially developed fire trucks, we can roll out and assist that civilian authority respond to the emergency. Thank you.
And if I may,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, I mean, this is, I mean, thank God for technology as we talk about the satellite phones. And this is in a very, very, very rare case that for some reason the governor just simply isn't available or incapacitated in any way or just cannot be reached. And I just want to point out to D again is it has to take reasonable and continuous efforts to contact the governor. This isn't like, hey, the governor's phone was busy, so I'm taking full authority. No, that's not that situation. This is the very, very rare case when there's a catastrophe, there's a flood, there's wildfires, there's an act that needs to happen to save lives and to prevent human suffering or to mitigate great property damage to the state. This is what this is about.
Further questions? Representative Wall.
Well, I guess, thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to Section 2, where it was read earlier, an event of war, disaster, insurrection, rebellion, et cetera, et cetera. So that's beyond natural catastrophe. For example, after 9/11, and I don't know all the facts, but I heard that I think Alaska State Defense Force was assigned to guard the bridge at Hurricane Gulch. I don't know if anyone can verify that. But I'm not sure exactly what that defense force consists of as volunteers or 77 or 80 people that throughout the state. I don't know exactly. I guess they're headquartered in Elmendorf or something. But you know, when I hear, let's say something like 9/11 happens and someone, maybe the governor can't be reached, maybe there's no communication, and a general says, hey, let's take the bridge. That's kind of concerning to me. I don't know if the Hurricane Gulch Bridge, if there's any verification of that. But
through the chair, this is Deputy Commissioner Dole. At that time, the Alaska State Defense Force was ordered into doing that mission by then Governor Knowles. If you look at the statute that's been drafted now, it specifically exempts that area as delegable to the Adjutant General. Those law enforcement or securing type missions like that. Governor Walker personally reviewed this proposal and talking about that aspect, he said if we're going to have the Alaska Organized Militia out to regulate the actions of Alaskans, that decision can only be made by the governor. It is not delegable. So that was, your concern was recognized in this bill already.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, because Section 2 was pointed out on page 2, and this is existing language. The first title, Governor May Order, has been removed. However, you go down into this section a little bit further, you'll see that only the governor can make those decisions. I just lost it with my eyes. Okay, so starting around 15, or just start at 14, or in the case of imminent danger or the occurrence of any of these events, or whenever responsible civil authorities fail to preserve law and order or protect life and liberty, or the governor believes that failure is imminent, the governor may order the organized militia or any part of it into active state service to execute the laws and to perform duties in connection with them that the governor considers proper. And then you'll also see on page 3, under section 3, going on to further down, on F, G, and H, and so forth, is that the organized militia may not be used. So there is conditions so it's very, there's some pretty strong sidebars on that.
Representative Ledoux.
No, I was just going to mention, talking about 9/11, that there was actually an interesting thing that happened in Kodiak right after that happened. Kodiak is the site of the rocket launch complex. So the head of the rocket launch complex, without consulting with either the municipal authorities or the governor, came out and announced that the road between Kodiak and the rocket launch was closed. I mean, so it's sometimes those unusual things bring out unusual and sometimes extra legal responses from folks. So it would probably be better in my mind to have something set up that actually takes into account these truly unusual circumstances and makes it a, makes for a legal way of doing things than having somebody simply taking over and assuming the authority themselves. Thank you.
Well, at this time, I think we'll hold House Bill 152 for a future hearing, and I should also advise the committee that still have House Bill 224 kicking around. The sponsor, Representative Johnston, has been working on a CS, and I think that is ready. So at a future date, perhaps bring that back along with this legislation and possibly House Resolution 5 from Representative Knopp. But we have a hearing on Thursday on the cost and price of health care. Details forthcoming. And we will gavel out at 4:01 p.m.